This is your story. This is my story. But most of all, this is the greatest story ever told. This is God's story.
You are listening to Reverend Dr. Rob White from the AULC Ministries. You can find us on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, TuneIn Radio and TalkShoe. Be sure to visit www.aulc.us for more free resources.
This is your story. This is my story. But most of all, this is the greatest story ever told. This is God's story. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did.
Prison is a hard place to find yourself in. It's one thing if you did something wrong to get there. It's another thing altogether if you're there as a victim versus an actual criminal, particularly if your conviction was sponsored by the members of your own family. Well, this is precisely the place that a young man named Joseph found himself in. We're introduced to him at the age of 17. He is the son of Jacob, the grandson of Isaac, and the great-grandson of Abraham. He's a part of this great nation that God in the upper story is slowly building to reveal his presence, his power, and his plan to get all people back. But this family didn't function as one who was going to bring us back into a relationship with God. They could barely get along with each other. Studies show us that firearms in the home are almost always either intentionally or accidentally used on family members versus perpetrators. The same is true for the weaponry of poor character. The handgun of lies and the shotgun of deception were used almost exclusively on every member of Joseph's family, particularly young Joseph. You see, of the 12 brothers, Joseph was dad's favorite. He even sported a coat of many colors that his dad gave him and left his brothers feeling cold-hearted towards him. And to make matters worse, Joseph had several dreams that he believed came from God, where at the end of the dream, all of his brothers were bowing down to him. In his innocence, he shared those dreams with his brothers. His brothers, in turn, declared their little brother their worst nightmare. One day, Daddy Jacob sent Joseph out in the field to fetch his brothers, who were tending to the sheep. They roughed up Joseph and then threw him into a pit. And over lunch, they made the decision to sell their younger brother to a band of gypsies on their way to Egypt. Joseph must have been frightened out of his mind. Once in Egypt, he's sold as a slave to serve in the house of Potiphar, the captain of the guard for the mighty Pharaoh. Then there's this surprising sentence that just appears in the story. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. Even though God allowed his brothers to abuse him, God is now prospering him. With God's help, Joseph quickly rises and is put in charge of Potiphar's entire house. But then another twist, another bomb drops. We are told that Joseph was well-built and handsome, and that Potiphar's wife made repeated advancements on Joseph, but he does the right thing and he refuses her. Well, one day she tells her husband that Joseph made an advance on her and she resisted. Joseph's put in prison. up and down like a seesaw. But the next thing we know, he's back up again. While Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. God again allowed for an unjust attack on Joseph and allowed him to go to prison. Yet once in prison, Joseph immediately gains favor and is put in charge of the prison. And one of the things that God did for Joseph was to give him the ability to interpret dreams. The story tells us that he's in prison for about 2 years when he gets a call from Pharaoh, the main dude, to come and interpret this dream he keeps having. Well, Joseph interprets the dream. Basically, he tells Pharaoh there's going to be 7 years of a bumper crop or lots of food, and then there will be 7 years of famine, no food at all. You know, it's really helpful to know this. Genesis 41:46 tells us that Pharaoh believes him and puts him second in command over all of Egypt to lead. He's now 30 years old. 7 years of harvest come, and Joseph stores up food to get them through the 7 years of famine. No other nation or people group knows what's coming. At the end of the first 7 years, the 7 years of famine begins, but under Joseph's leadership, they are prepared. Now, the famine is affecting everyone everywhere, including his father and his brothers back in Canaan. Jacob, Joe's dad, sends his sons to Egypt to get some food so they don't die. When they arrive in Egypt, they bow down before the second in command of all of Egypt, their punk brother Joseph, even though they didn't recognize him. Joseph is now 39 years old. 22 years has passed since he was sold down the river, thrown under the bus by his brothers. 22 years passed before the dream he dreamed as a teenage boy came true. After several emotional encounters, Joseph finally reveals his identity to his brothers. Here's what Joseph had to say to them in the story. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." When they had done so, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been a famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will be no plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God." What Joseph's brothers did to him in the lower story was completely wrong and had lifelong consequences of pain and guilt and depression. As a matter of fact, they could never really ever forgive themselves. But God used their sin-filled jealousy to accomplish his overall purpose, his upper story plan, which requires Israel to survive the famine. You see, somewhere in this journey, Joseph captured this, and very few people ever do. This is what enabled Joseph to process all the junk of his brothers and forgive them. Joseph was able to forgive his brothers for what they did to him in the lower story because he captured God's upper story plan, and that's huge. Some of you might think, wouldn't it have been easier for God to use his influence to recommend Joseph for the job instead of making him go through 22 years of struggle? Well, those 22 years of up and down struggles molded Joseph into the kind of man who could do what he did with integrity. Those 22 years gave Joseph an opportunity to see God's hand in life's most hopeless circumstances and situations and to learn to trust in God completely. Joseph, out of his position of power, moves his entire family to Egypt and gives them the fertile land of Goshen. The story tells us that when his dad was getting close to Egypt, Joseph went out in his chariot to meet him. Here's what the story says. As soon as Joseph appeared before him, he threw his arms around his father and wept for a long time. Joseph went on to be 110 years old, Yes, he had 22 tough years, but he ended up with 71 really great ones. And how rich it must have been to know that he was used by God to save Israel and to move God's upper story plan further toward completion. You know, the story is likely being rewritten for your life. Romans 8:28 tells us, and we know that all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. This promise of God tells us that if we love God and align our lives to his upper story purposes, everything in our lives, the ups and the downs, the mountaintops and the valleys, the highs and the hurts, the raises and the rejections, the good and the bad, are all working together to accomplish good. So be patient. Trust God. Let him mold you during the difficult seasons to equip you for the assignment ahead. You may be in a prison cell right now, either real or figuratively speaking, but if you align your life to God, your story isn't finished yet.
Welcome. I'm Reverend Dr. Rob White from the AULC Ministries with this week's chapter of The Story. Now, before we get started, I'd like to give you an update of what's happening here at the AULC Ministries. As with many churches, we too are struggling with this new normal. So we're making some changes here that hopefully will make life a bit easier. Now, we've started revamping our website at www.aulc.us to make your visits more pleasant and enjoyable, and to make the website more mobile-friendly, too. You no longer need to use an app to view our website. It now will automatically sense that you're on a mobile device or will resize accordingly to your smartphone or mobile device. Also, you can now see our live streaming from the main page and in a window that will better fit your viewing experience. Now, we're also working on new technologies behind the scenes that'll benefit you as well. Now, one more thing. Athens Universal Life Church, this church here, started out as a church online in 2012 and then transitioned to a nursing home ministry. In March of 2020, after the pandemic began, we began transitioning back to a church online. Since we don't have a brick-and-mortar building, our transition back to online is, well, basically coming home again. And it's most likely going to stay this way for a while. Okay, enough of the updates. And like last week, previously on The Story. In Chapter 2 of The Story, we've seen how God took an older couple, Abraham and Sarah, and even after they were more than 100 years old, gave them a child, Isaac, and promised Abraham that he would be the father of a nation, and so it began. Today, we are in chapter 3 of the story, and it's called Joseph from Slave to Deputy Pharaoh. Now, I'm going to ask you a question here. How many of you grew up in a home with siblings? I mean, with brothers or sisters. Now, I'm sure that some of you had wonderful family relationships. You and your sisters or brothers never fought, never were in competition with each other, and you never vied for attention, right? However, for the rest of us, we have a little different story when it comes to our childhood memories and our relationship with our siblings. For most of us, we've experienced at least some level of sibling rivalry. Now, I'm the oldest of three in our family. I have two younger sisters, and we are well acquainted with sibling rivalry. Sibling rivalry is as old as Cain and Abel. And as a child, I was sure that one of my sisters was a direct descendant of Cain. And there were times that I thought I was going to play the role of Abel. However, for the most part, my sisters were fairly normal. For Mom, as long as it didn't mean a trip to the hospital, she pretty much left it up to us to work out things amongst ourselves. Now, I know From some families, those childhood sibling rivalries continue even into adulthood. It shows up at family gatherings. One brother might just happen to mention how many square feet the new home he's building has. Or a sister might subtly mention that her oldest daughter just got a full-ride scholarship to Harvard. And then there may be another sibling's son might have just been appointed captain to his school's varsity sports team. Now, sibling rivalry is always a sad human reality when it's taken too far. And if it's not your own lot in life, you probably know someone for whom it is a part of their reality and it's damaging their relationships. But the good news for all of us is that the Bible is a book of relationships. First, God's relationship with humanity in general and with each of us in particular. Second, humanity's relationship with one another, like society in general, and in each family in particular. Now, Adam and Eve, the first humans in relationship with God, they break that relationship with God. Cain and Abel, the first siblings in relationship with one another, they break the relationship with each other. The stories of broken relationships run all the way through the book of Genesis, indeed through much of the Bible, but in Genesis in particular. Now, think about the first siblings for a minute here, Cain and Abel. We well know what happens. Cain kills Abel. And I think that qualifies for sibling rivalry. Now, much later, there is Jacob and Esau. Jacob cheats Esau out of his birthright. Then he runs off and hides for 20 years, and he's literally frightened to death of his brother Esau. Now, that's sibling rivalry. Then Jacob has these sons. He has 12 sons in total. The 10 oldest sons sell the 11th son, Joseph, into slavery. No doubt about it, that qualifies as sibling rivalry. Genesis chapters 37 to 50, which is covered in chapter 3 of the story, is a powerful story, and it's the story of Joseph. And the story of Joseph is primarily a lower story, dealing with broken humanity, with glimpses and reminders of the upper story, of how God redeems, restores, and reconciles real relationships. Now remember, God's great desire and God's ultimate passion is to restore relationship. God wants to restore a relationship with us and our relationships with each other. The book of Genesis tells us this very well. It begins with Abraham, through whom God promised to bring a blessing to the nations. That promise is repeated with Abraham's son Isaac and again with Isaac's son Jacob. These are the three patriarchs of the Jewish faith. Now Jacob has a total of 12 sons. The first 10 of them seem to get along reasonably well, especially when we remember that these sons are members of a blended family. There's one dad, but then there are multiple moms. And as is typical in human reality, the kids are stuck in this reality, and they're trying to find a way to make it all work out. Now, you might say that the Brady Bunch got their idea from the book of Genesis, and it's all right there in Genesis, we see it. The brothers, the first 10 brothers at least, kind of bind themselves together, and things are going along fairly well in their family and in their lives. But then the dad, he starts to show favoritism towards the one son, Joseph, the son of Rachel. Now, parents, if you want to build some animosity amongst your children, this is the exact way to do it. You pick one and make them the obvious favorite. Here in Genesis, Jacob really does show favoritism towards Joseph. And the brothers, they don't like it at all. Look here in Genesis 37, verses 2 to 4. It says, "This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel, and remember, God likes changing names like he changed Abram's name to Abraham. He also changed Jacob's name to Israel. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him." Now the gifts that Jacob gave were not equal. The time he gave was not equal, and the affection that he showed was not equal. And the resentment grows, and rivalry begins to run wild. And when the 10 older brothers get the chance, they get rid of their younger brother Joseph, and they take that chance, and they run with it. Now, I can remember when I didn't want my younger sisters tagging along anymore, but I never, ever did this to them. Genesis 37, verses 23 to 24 says, "So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. They take Joseph, and they put him in this pit, a pit that was too deep to climb out of. It would not have been very large, maybe not even enough room to lie down in. And then they leave him there for 3 days with no water and no food and not even a corner to go in. But if that wasn't bad enough, a caravan comes along and the brothers decide they're going to sell their little brother to the traders. Now, Joseph goes from being in the pit to now he's into slavery. These traders take Joseph on into Egypt, and there they sell him for a quick profit to a rich man named Potiphar. Potiphar is a high official in Pharaoh's government. Doesn't take long for Potiphar to realize that Joseph has some real abilities. So Potiphar puts Joseph in charge of his entire house. Now, unfortunately, Mrs. Potiphar also thinks that Joseph has some real abilities too. The Bible puts it this way in Genesis 39, starting at the end of verse 6. "Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, 'Come to bed with me.' After multiple attempts at seducing Joseph, Mrs. Potiphar's scorn then turns to anger and revenge. Then she accuses Joseph of the very thing that she has attempted and he had refused. Now, fortunately or unfortunately for Joseph, he is a foreigner. And throughout human history, a nation's justice always favors the majority's race and ethnicity. Joseph is also, number one, a different color, and number two, he speaks a different language. And number three, he's also from a different land. Three strikes, and you're not just out, you're put in prison." So now imagine Joseph has gone from being the chosen, beloved of his fathers. Then he was thrown into a pit, and then from that pit he was sold into slavery. And now, as a slave, he's thrown into prison. And while he's in prison, he befriends and comes to know two guys who have a falling out of favor with the Pharaoh. These two guys were also part of the Pharaoh's household. Now they're in prison. Joseph interprets the dreams of the Pharaoh's baker and cupbearer. And just as Joseph says, the cupbearer is restored to his position in Pharaoh's house. But before he leaves the prison, Joseph asks him to remember him. Now look over at Genesis 41. Chapter 41, verse 1. "When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile. This is not just 3 days in a pit. This is 2 full years additional in a prison. Then, when Pharaoh has this dream, no one in Pharaoh's court is able to interpret the dream. Finally, the cupbearer remembers Joseph. Joseph is prepared and brought before Pharaoh, and when he interprets the Pharaoh's dream correctly, he's promoted to the second highest position in all the land. At 17, Joseph is thrown into the pit. He's sold into slavery. He's falsely accused. He's wrongly imprisoned, and he's forgotten about. Now, at the age of 30, he rises to a position from which he will not only be able to help the nation of Egypt, but all the surrounding nations, and eventually aiding and even reconciling with his own brothers and reuniting with his father and restoring the hope that God will keep his promise that through a descendant of Abraham, all the people on earth will be blessed. Now, I want to encourage you to read chapter 3 of the story if you have not already, or read the corresponding chapters in Genesis, which is chapters 37 to 50 in the Bible. Because this is an amazing story of how God is at work in the midst of broken humanity. I say to you, God always keeps his promises. God says, I will bless you, and you will be a blessing, and all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. God promises this to Abraham and to his descendants, and God does it. This promise extends to Isaac, Abraham's son, and God keeps his promise. This promise extends to Isaac's son Jacob, and God keeps his promise. This promise carries on to Jacob's son Joseph, and God does it once again. God blesses Joseph in the midst of all the abundant brokenness. Brokenness, which is obviously all around him, and brokenness, which is obviously within him, and yet God blesses Joseph. And Joseph literally becomes a blessing to the people around him, and all the peoples on earth are blessed through him. Now, it's a physical blessing, because there is food and there is life. It's also a spiritual blessing, because from the lineage of Joseph will come the Messiah of his people and the Savior of all people in the world, Jesus Christ. So why is it that God would tell us this story, this very odd story, a story that is rife with sibling rivalry? Why is it even in the Bible, and why does God choose to inspire and have written and then hand all the way down to us in 2021 these ancient words? Why is that? What is God revealing in the story, chapter 3, which I said is Genesis 37 to 50 in the Bible? Well, here it is. Number one, in the midst of the brokenness of our lower stories, God is still unfolding his upper story. The Bible is a book of relationships, and many, or most, and nearly all of these human relationships, they involve rivalry, brokenness, obvious sin, and loss. But God does not give up. God has an agenda. He has a way and a will, and God will not abandon us. Whether you're in a pit, or you're a slave, or you're in prison unjustly, God is faithful. And God is still unfolding his story. God is still revealing himself and his salvation for all the world. Remember this, God is sovereign and is at work in us, through us, and if he has to, in spite of us. We see this in Genesis 39, verses 2 to 3 and 20 to 24. Now we can read this. It's right here in the Bible. And what's more, you can see that simply by looking at your own life. Examine your life, and you will see that God is sovereign and is at work in us and through us, and if he has to, in spite of us, to fulfill his promise to reach the world with the message of salvation through Jesus. Secondly, God includes this story in the Bible because through it, we see that number two, we live with the real need to be restored, reconciled, and reunited. You see all three of those in the life of Joseph. Now, it may be that it's our need to be restored is because of sibling rivalry, or maybe it's because of broken marriage vows, or it could be crimes committed against us. It may be some of the most horrendous things that we can possibly imagine, or it may be any number of sins committed against us, or sin which we've committed. Our need to be restored can be seen on two levels. We need restoration on the horizontal plane, our relationships with each other. And we need to be restored, reconciled, and reunited on the vertical, that is between us and God. It may be that we have loved ourselves more than we love God. Or it may be that we have loved our stuff, our things, more than we love God. Or it may be that we have simply served other gods, the gods of power, the gods of wealth, positions, popularity, or sensuality. It's in the story right here in the life of Joseph. It's all in the Bible. And the truth is that we all live with the real need to be restored, reconciled, and reunited. We need to be reconciled, restored, and reunited, one with the other, and each of us with God. We see this in Genesis 45, verses 4 to 5, 7 and 8. Horizontally with each other and vertically with God. We need to be restored, reconciled, and reunited with God and each other, heart to heart. So, through the story of Joseph, God is revealing that in the midst of our brokenness, His upper story continues to unfold. And finally, through the story of Joseph, that number three, there is no pit so deep, yet He is deeper still. We see this in Genesis 50, verses 19 to 20 and 24 to 25. Joseph has transitioned. He went from being the chosen one. He went from being the apple of his father's eye. He went from being beloved of his father, and he sank into a pit. And if that pit wasn't deep enough, from there he was sold into slavery. And if that was not enough, and you thought it couldn't get any worse, he's then falsely accused, locked up in prison, forgotten about for 2 years. Now let's be honest about it. Some of us today, if we're honest, then we know what it's like to slip and have a fall. Some of us know what a pit looks like from the inside. And some of us got in the pit and just dug and made it deeper. Some of us know what it's like to be a slave to ourselves, a slave to our own desire, a slave without the control of oneself, and a slave to addiction. Some of us know what a prison's like. We've been there. Maybe we were visiting our family or a friend, or maybe we were the ones locked up there, held against our will. Sadly, for many of us, the ones of us who know these things, we also know this truth. Many of our pits, we dig ourselves. Much of our slavery, we sell ourselves. Most of our prisons have bars of our own making. Sometimes we are like Joseph. Sometimes it's what is done to us, but sometimes it's what we do to ourselves. In the midst of all, God is revealing Himself in the story of Joseph. And in the midst of it all, God is revealing Himself in our own stories as well. There was a woman who ended up living until she was 91 years old. She never married. She was poorly educated and never held any position of power. Her name was Corrie ten Boom. And when the Nazis invaded her home country of Holland in 1940, She and her family began to hide Jews in their home, trying to keep them out of concentration camps. Eventually, the Ten Boom family was betrayed by other Dutch, and when they were discovered, the entire Ten Boom family was rounded up, and they too were thrown into the concentration camps. Here, their elderly father died right away in prison. Several years later, her sickly sister also died, and Corey spent the rest of the war in the horrific confines of the Ravensbrück, a notorious women's concentration camp. Her life story was published in the book The Hiding Place, which was later made into the movie of the same name. In the book, Corey tells a story of the fleas that infested her barracks, her bunk, and herself. She tells how she began to curse the fleas and how she began to curse the Nazis. But her sister Betsy, the sickly one, gently corrected and reprimanded Corey. Betsy said to her sister, "Oh no, Corey, don't give in to hate. We are here to love." Betsy went on to tell Corey that she thanked God for the fleas. For if it were not for the fleas, the guards would come. And if they did, they would discover our Bible and take it away. And if they did, then they would not have this word of hope from which to feed others and our own souls as well. Betsy, who was never strong in health, grew steadily weaker, and she died on December 16, 1944, as a prisoner. Her body and remains were never found. Some of Betsy's last words to her sister were these: "We must tell them what we have learned here. We must tell them that there is not a pit so deep, yet he is deeper still. They will listen to us, Corey, because we have been there." Now, I don't know where you've been. I've not seen what your eyes have seen, and I have not felt what your heart has felt. But I would say this to you because this is strong, and this is sure, and this is true. There is no pit so deep, yet he is deeper still. Thanks be to God. That's our Lord's message for this Lord's Day, and I hope that you got a blessing out of it. Join us next week for another chapter of the story. Go out this week, be a blessing and be blessed, because the more you're a blessing, the more you will be blessed. I want to thank you all for watching, and I hope to see you all next week. Thank you.